Okay.
Awesome. All right. And now we are recording again with more technical difficulties. Hello, we're back to Conversations with the Perverted Negress, which has now got a title and a format. Aren't we awesome? And we had left off.
Balls in place.
We were talking about the delightful pufferfish analogy, styles of dominance and styles of submission and blah, blah, blah. Don't try to get bigger and pricklier than I am. And John Patrick. Now, do you go by John Patrick, or do you go by just John, or just JP? I know you go by JP, but I don't know
yeah.
what people call you normally.
Normally, people call me JP. I don't have another name. Like, I already have a scene name. There have been times when people have tried to introduce me as the control enthusiast, and my immediate yeah. response is to go, no. My name is JP.
okay. This is the fucking scene names. It's like when... In my opinion, like, your name is descriptive. Like, I would always, like, if I met someone with that handle, I would say, what do you go by? I wouldn't assume to be like, well, what's your real name? But I would say, what name do you use? Because the control enthusiast sounds to me like a title. Versus,
sure.
you know, someone who's like, daddy's cum whore. You're like, I'm not gonna turn to you with the munch and be like, hey, daddy's cum whore, did you put in your $20?
Yes. That's probably...
Like, may I refer to you with some other titular approach? So we were talking about styles of dominance. And
yeah, and that, like...
Your own journey into discovering how you accessed your own dominant archetype.
Well, that... If the it's sort of a... It's the thing of recognizing the form that my essential dominant impulses were going to take.
Mm-hmm.
If this was a thing, I would be a card carrying introvert.
Yeah.
And I've always been that sort of quieter, reserved, insular, singular kind of person. And I, the majority of that I picked up from my mother, who is very similar to me. Her family background is such that she was adopted into a family that she didn't particularly like. Her sister was adopted. She didn't particularly like her sister. She always felt very singular, very much like an island, and somebody who just wasn't going to take any shit from anybody. She wasn't particularly emotionally expressive. She's very to the point. She's very direct. And she was the person who sort of ran our household. My mother made all the rules. My dad was a very emotional cat. He was really... he was very big and expressive. He comes from a big family. His family was all very tumultuous. They loved each other. They hated each other. Family is really important, but they couldn't stand to be around each other some of the time. Right, that whole thing. Dad was very religious. Mom was very not. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to me that the way that I learned to... the ways of subtlety... I suppose, I guess, if I had to identify them in the way that I choose to engage with power comes from the way that my mom made rules and the way that she engaged in power, where for her, she didn't have to be big. She didn't have to be blustery. She didn't have to pufferfish, as we're saying. She just was so unshakably solid in her belief that this was what was going to happen. There wasn't any... It's like, why would you even bother to argue? And now, having said that, my brother would argue. But he's a radically different person than I am. For me, my mother would make a rule, and it would make sense. And so I would follow it.
Right.
And then with my following it, suddenly it was like, okay, that rule doesn't apply anymore. Now this one, which gives you more freedom, does apply. Great, so I would follow that. And so on and so on and so on. That idea of not having to be forceful, not having to push, not having to take, but creating a situation where the obvious thing is for me to accept just makes the most sense. And this actually comes back to something that was briefly brought up before, where we were talking about the difference in... where I brought up my idea that service has to be sort of bi-directionally consensual for it to actually be service.
Yes.
Right? Otherwise, you're just doing something nice for someone. Right? And I feel sometimes like I would love there to exist training on how to receive service with grace.
Well, you know, some people happen to have that class on their roster, and I would say this add to the checklist of, things to do up in the frozen north up your way, would certainly love to confabulate on doing that class from both sides of the coin. I have taught the class from the point of view of, hey, submissive into service here. It can be a rah-rah for other submissives in the class. However, as a submissive person in a position of some power, i.e. standing in front of a room full of people, a lot of that class is geared towards the D-type people. And a lot of that class is like, look, here are ways you can consensually coerce dedication and service out of us. I'm not going to tell you some sort of magic trick that's going to get everyone kneeling at your feet, but there are some basic things that I think a lot of dominants miss. And obviously, you have had an experience of seeing how convincing people that the best thing for them is to do it your way. And evoking in that way enthusiastic consent is so helpful to service, and I like to cite the example because I constantly try to pound into people's heads. So I'm like, look, treat these relationships when you're negotiating them like a job interview, because it's going to be a lot like it is work, and it's hot, sexy work, but it is still work. And I will tell you, as someone who's been an executive assistant and who's been very fortunate in that I've never exec assisted someone I didn't like, but that's not just because I'm lucky. It's because I'm interviewing my potential boss while I'm sitting there, and I'm vibing with them, and I'm seeing how their body language is, and I'm seeing how they treat me in that hour or two we spend together in that initial meeting, right? And part of what I have find as a universal in the people that I have served in a executive sense is that they are chill. Like, none of these people have been those people who go rampaging around the office screaming at motherfuckers for some shit they didn't do. They're all the people who have dedicated swarms of people following them. Like, my bosses, bosses that people would do anything for. And those bosses, like the people you're just like, oh my God, I would if I had to pick anyone for it would be this person. Like, and that's the people you want to submit to. And I'm like, dominance, you want to be that boss.
And you know what it ends up being, I think? That on some level, both from the point of view of that boss and from the point of view of you are a significant amount of that service and that engagement in service is going to be about making you better,
Yes.
not making you worse, making you feel better, making you feel more powerful, making you feel more centered, making you feel more honored and respected, like making you feel more true to what you should be doing. It's not about making you feel worse or worthless.
No. And this is an interesting thing because the feeling of worthlessness, that type of degree of humiliation, is something that I think can be hot in a scene, but I don't believe, and I feel very strongly about this, which is code for, me saying, yeah, and I'm right, is that in a sustainable relationship, degradation and humiliation as the core of the reasons, worthlessness, degradation, humiliation, dehumanization, as the core of your reasons for submission and the justification thereof is a friable fucking foundation and has a very short expiration date.
Okay, so in total agreement, my thought has always been that it has it has it essentially a short shelf life because you're breaking somebody down, you're telling them that they're not worth anything, and you're letting them get better a little bit, like come back up from wherever they were. But even if they just go back to baseline and you drop them down again, and they get back to baseline and drop them down again, that my concern has always been that there's no sense of ever sort of going anywhere.
Yep.
Like there's no sense of development. It's you're only getting back to baseline so that you can be crushed again.
Yes, and again, that's that. There may be people for whom that works, but I think that that's a small number. I think that in general, people want to feel good and seen and uplifted. You know, and
Yes.
that I know who I've seen had successful relationships and who I've seen struggle and grow themselves. Are the ones who see part of what they do as dominance, as owners, is improving the property. You know, it's buying that house and at the end of the day, saying today is better than it was yesterday, and tomorrow it's going to be even better. And that paradigm I find so refreshing, and it's part of the reason when I try to explain to non-kinky people, they're like, why would you want to be owned? And don't you want to be independent? Don't you feel disempowered? Da, 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 da. You know, and part of what I say is, this is someone who was saying, I am delighted to expend my energy in your growth because it serves me and because it works for you. And that balance and that kind of, like I say, it's a power exchange, right? It's not a power theft or coup d'etat or pillage. It is, I give you give me. And the idea of bullying and pushing and taking that from someone is difficult. It's part of the reason when I see people who identify as submissive have the sort of approach of, you need to take my submission. You need to hunt me down and grab it. And I'm like, ah, it doesn't really work for me. Well, I want to be hunted down and grabbed when it comes to like play. That's super hot. But when it comes to submission, I need to sit and look at the person eye to eye and say, okay, right now we are equals. We are looking at one another as equal human beings. Now I'm going to say, and despite the fact that we could match wits and match passions, match all of that stuff, I am going to subsume my energy into yours because I know at the end of the day, what I get back is X, Y, and Z. And stating that openly and having that be not just a part of the negotiation, but an ongoing part of the dynamic, because that's where the sort of heat and energy and fire happens. And again, I feel very strongly about that. And as you say, trying to maintain that in any other way is going to be ultimately destructive.
Probably, right? Like, as you said, there are some people for whom it works, and I'm not going to say that I have a real aversion to speaking in absolutes. So I'm not going to say that what works for me is going to ever work for anybody else. I will say that recently somebody was telling me a story about somebody in their life who did something that was just sort of like a shitty thing to do. And my response to that was, and I've been sort of, caring about this person's well-being one step removed because this person was in the life of somebody who's close to me. But then this other person did this shitty thing, and my response to that was, well, they've just lost a significant amount of my attention. And the phrasing of that came out kind of instinctually, but when I sort of thought about it, I was like, okay, that's actually a marker of sort of how high how high I hold someone in my esteem. How much of my attention do they get? And if somebody's going to be in service to me, I like that person. I want that person to be awesome. Because I want that person to be constantly worthy and deserving and earning my attention. And
Kind of point.
part of that is about me, like, because so much of my attention is about making them better, and not just making them better for me, but making them better for them. Because like what at the end of the day, if that person is to varying degrees if that person is a representative of me, why would I not want them to be awesome?
If you're not awesome?
Okay, if I'm not awesome, then I don't give a shit. But if I'm not awesome, then I'm doing it wrong. But I guess I just mean that if what you're saying about having somebody who is on an equal level as you, or even, dare I say, better, smarter, stronger, whatever that ends up being.
Right.
Having that person actually be in so many ways, and in certain ways above you, and have them still say, in this moment, I am choosing to be under your hand, is that the amount of responsibility that comes with that, I think, cannot be understated.
No.
And so part of what I talk about a class about receiving service with grace, it also, I think, has to do with that. It is about being able to say, it is about putting yourself in a situation as a dominant person in whatever form it takes, of being able to say, I appreciate, I honor, and I respect the gift that you are giving me. And as part of this exchange, I promise to take the best care of you that I can.
Right.
Regardless of what that looks like. Because somebody might want care to be harder than another person. Right?
That's true.
The form that it takes is going to be particular to each individual dynamic. But the intention should be the same. The intention should be, while you are with me, and when you are not with me, you will be better than before you came to me.
Right. You know, it's interesting because that betterment, you know, and of course I'm sitting here going, I will now catalog every single DS relationship I've ever had, which of course doesn't take very long because I haven't had very many. But I will say that up to and including the ones that were difficult, because of course there was a difficulty, that's why they ended, right? Mm-hmm. I'm certainly better. Even the toughest ones, which I would count my most recent relationship to be the most difficult in terms of having to walk away when I was like, there is so much that is good, there's this core piece that is missing, and I can't. Mm-hmm. I have to have it. However, so much better in terms of my own internal structure, in terms of my boundaries, in terms of knowing that I am worth the amount of attention and focus that I will say demanding. I was like, oh, I don't want to use the word demanding. But I'm like, no, it is a demand. I would not work for a corporation that had business practices that I found abhorrent. I would not work for someone who treated me poorly. I would not submit to a person who fell into that category either, obviously. But by the same token, you know, you do have to make demands. That's kind of part of the whole thing when you negotiate. You're like, these are my terms. I need these things from you in order for this to work.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and the everyone involved in the negotiation has to say, these are the terms. Can you step up to the plate? Either a yes or a no. So I will use the word demands. Damn it.
You use it. Use that term. Use the fuck out of that term.
You know, because it's at that point where you're saying, you know what, I'm not trying to be the boss of you, but I have to be the boss of myself during the course of this negotiation. And in the same way that a dominant is to say, well, here's what it takes to submit to me, the submissive has to say, well, this is what it takes for you to dominate. This is these are the terms. I mean, that's very clear to me.
Totally.
And I think it's very, that I feel very strongly about that.
It's... I recognize that you feel very strong with that, and I agree. And I also feel like that it's important when either person recognizes that they are not able, for whatever reason, to uphold their part of the they're to uphold their part of that bargain,
right?
That they own that shit and make a choice for the betterment of both people, mm-hmm. with the recognition that that choice might be ending the dynamic. I know, but what's the point of it? Like to continue in a dynamic that is not giving, people what they want or what they need or what they cherish, to do it in a way that does not, at its core, really have a sense of honor and respect and admiration that goes both ways.
Word.
If you can't look at yourself and admire what it is you're doing, if you can't look at yourself in the mirror, and this does go to both people, this goes to both sides of the equation. If you can't look at yourself in the mirror and be solid in what you are engaging in, you have to ask yourself, am I doing this just out of hunger? And if you're doing it just out of hunger, you shouldn't be.
Can we just like find everyone in all the scenes everywhere and shake them and be like, are you doing this out of hunger and desperation?
Well, it's I mean, you don't go grocery shopping when you're hungry.
No, man, or when you're high.
Or I'll take your word for that. My thinking is that...
let me sidebar. Grocery shopping, I use as a metaphor, people do when we are high.
Uh-huh.
On play, on new relationship energy, on all that shit.
Uh-huh.
You know, or when we're hungry, when we don't have the thing that we need at our core. Oh my God,
happens,
best analogy ever. Oh, so hard.
It happens all the time. It happens all the time. And here's the thing about hunger. Is that I firmly believe that no decision should ever be made based on hunger.
Yeah.
Hunger can affect a decision, but hunger should never determine a decision.
No, well, you know, the thing is that it's I agree and I'm mad because it's so difficult to swerve that. You know, I mean, I know firsthand how that is, and I can look back and I can say I'm fairly proud of my track record, but the avoidance of acting out of hunger is physically painful and emotionally stressful and so agonizing. The net result is good. I don't have any relationships I regret. I have intact respect for all of my previous dominance. And that came at a price of an incredible amount of self-discipline. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that. And making a lot of decisions that felt like, you know, cue the sad Hulk walking away at the end of the Incredible Hulk music, you know, when I'm just going, oh, I know this is the right thing to do, but it hurts so much. And so I have an entire well of empathy for those people who are like, it hurts too much. I'm actually going to stay because the hunger feels like it's going to hurt worse. And that's a crazy choice to make, but I get it. I get why people do it. I really do.
I also get it. Because I see it in everything. Like by no means is that confined to the kink community.
No.
Decisions made out of hunger because being in something bad that feeds your hunger is better than not having anything at all.
Yeah,
right?
That's the question.
but I think sometimes one of the things that makes it so difficult sometimes, I think, for people of kink is you spend so much time when you're discovering this aspect of yourself feeling so cut off from everything that you really, really, really genuinely feel comprises the totality of you, the totality of your experience, of your erotic life, of your sexual connection with your body, with your brains, with your everything. And you feel like you are the only person who feels this way. And then, and so you feel lost and you feel alone, and that is a kind of otherness that is heaped on whatever other kind of otherness you're already carrying around. And it's so deeply linked with the inherent Western world sociocultural body shame and sexual shame that is everywhere. All that shit is heaped on you. And then suddenly you find yourself in a situation where people are like, no, man, that's okay. That's, dude, that is totally cool. No, come on, we're all doing the same thing. It's okay, you found us. We're your people.
Right.
And why wouldn't you want to just dive into that, as you said it before, smorgasbord?
See, now
see how, I'm at you. See how I'm bringing it back? See? I don't even know how many conversations ago that was. Just keep bringing it back. So you find yourself in the situation where suddenly you have access to that which you for many people, I think, you have access to that thing that you never believed you would have access to.
Yeah.
And so what for the vast, vast majority of people, what is impossible in that moment is to be patient. But there also seems like the, I'm not going to use the word community, but inside of the culture, inside of a form positive culture takes, the general perception of is one of patience, is one with access.
God damn it. First of all, we have like 4 minutes left and you're starting to break up. So you were saying you were eschewing community. So we'll call it a confederation because we're bringing it back to the whole Paula Deen thing. Plus, I love the word in its original context, a confederation of perverts. It broke up a little bit at the end there to what you were saying. Hello? Have you cut off entirely?
Okay. Yeah. You're breaking up a little bit, so I'm not sure.
Okay.
So...
All right, so probably
I think
from my end, and I'm assuming that what's being recorded is probably I don't even know what it's going to get. So probably what we're going to have to do is just stop this fucking thing. And try to wrap it up. All right, well, I'm going to pause it at this point and call you back.
Okay.